epidemic proportions. If you're one of the millions trying to reduce your blood pressure to improve your health, there is a great new way to help you do it without drugs. It is the Zona, Z-O-N-A Plus. Air Force researchers discovered this effective and non-invasive treatment that works with isometric therapy. Check it out now at OrderZona.com or call 800-936-9080. Clinical studies have shown more than a 10% drop in blood pressure for regular users of Zona Plus. Get yours today by calling 800-936-9080 or going online to OrderZona.com. Listeners of this station will save $50 by using promo code USA2017. Reduce your blood pressure now the safe and drug-free way. 800-936-9080 or OrderZona.com and use promo code USA2017. That's 800-936-9080.
A crazy weekend near the tallest dam in the United States. Here's correspondent Chris Barnes.
We had to make a very, very critical and difficult decision to initiate the evacuation.
That's the Butte County Sheriff in Northern California. Late yesterday, when they'd evacuated 200,000 people from their homes out of a concern about the crumbling emergency spillway from the Oroville Dam. Residents like Samantha saying they're trying to cope with that situation.
My dogs are trapped in their kennels and everything, and my roommates are just stressful right now.
While officials indicate the threat may have eased, it's not clear yet when the almost 200,000 people evacuated from their homes are going to be able to go back. I'm Chris Barnes.
What's that smell? Some Ford Explorer owners say whatever it is, it's making them sick. They say some sort of rotten egg or sulfur odor is coming through the vents when the air conditioning is running. Ford said the smell issue poses no safety risks. USA Radio News.
Oh, fresh powder. I'll get the skis.
Ugh, I can't.
Winter nasal congestion. Is it A, cold, B, sinus pressure, C, allergies?
I'm not sure.
For all of the above, the answer is D, Allegra D, a maximum strength decongestant plus a powerful non-drowsy antihistamine for 24 hours of relief.
Feel better?
Yep. Feel like racing?
Hey, wait!
This winter, the answer is Allegra D. Look for Allegra D at the pharmacy counter. Use as directed.
Russian officials are sounding off about North Korea's latest missile test. Here's our correspondent in Moscow.
The chairman of the Russian lower house of parliament's International Affairs Committee said that the recent ballistic missile test conducted by Pyongyang could require new international consultations. Leonid Slutsky added North Korea challenged the international community by conducting the missile launch, as such actions violate United Nations Security Council decisions. He said that Russia opposes this self-proclaimed North Korea's nuclear status, but Moscow sees political and diplomatic efforts as the only way to solve the nuclear problem. Julia Lyubova, Moscow.
One family's nasty obituary has gone viral. Here's correspondent Chris Barnes.
The family wrote a scathing obituary for 75-year-old Leslie Ray Popeye Charping, in which they said he lived 29 years longer than expected and much longer than he deserved to. Charping's kids say they were relieved when the Galveston man passed away. The obituary got so many hits, it crashed several news sites. The family wrote that Charping's hobbies included being abusive to family members, harming the family pets, and failing to contribute to society. I'm Chris Barnes.
Nearly a dozen Louisiana children are suffering from minor to moderate injuries after their school bus overturned this morning. State police say the bus was carrying 40 students when it collided with another vehicle about 45 miles northeast of Baton Rouge. Officials say the bus driver was not ticketed and properly licensed. USA Radio News.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Yeah, Weather this afternoon, mostly sunny with a high near 39, breezy with a northwest wind 22 to 24, with gusts as high as 44 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low around 21, northwest wind 6 to 13 miles per hour. Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high near 43, west wind 3 to 8 miles per hour. Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 27, south wind 3 to 6 miles per hour. Wednesday, partly sunny with a high near 44, light southwest wind becoming west 6 to 11 miles per hour in the morning. Winds could gust as high as 21 miles per hour.
Welcome to Mental Health Matters. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and our co-host is Tracy Ivey. And this is NAMI's Hour, compliments at the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. And NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness. There is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state, every state in the union, and overseas. And when I said every county in the state, I meant every county in the state of New Jersey and overseas and actually in every state also. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We have no office. We have no paid staff. We work out of our houses. And as I've been told many times, the commute when you work out of your house is great. You know, kitchen to the family room or something. No traffic. But what we try to do is we try to help folks who either have a mental illness and need help, or families who have someone in their family who has a mental illness and need help. And we do this in many ways. We run a support group once a month, and it's totally free. You don't have to register or anything like that, and you don't have to be a member of NAMI to come. Yeah, and we try to help people. Some of the people who come have gone through what that person is going through then, and they can give from their experience. And it's very helpful. We also run a 12-week course called Family to Family. And it's also all free. All the paper and binders and everything that to the classmates are all free. And we try to let the person know, try to let them better understand what the person with the mental illness is going through and how to handle it, what to say, what not to say in certain circumstances, what to do, what not to do. We talk about medications, side effects, things like that. And just in general, to get the person, whether it's a family member, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, whatever, next door neighbor or somebody you work with, to better understand what that person with the illness is going through. And a lot of times people don't realize what all is taking place with the individual with, you know, a mental health issue. We also run a basics course for families who have children, and you'd be surprised how many children have a touch of mental illness, whether it's ADHD or, you know, whatever. And it's a 6-week course, again, totally free. And if you have a question or want to ask about something and want to reach out to us, it's 908-284-0500. We don't man the phone 24/7, but somebody at least checks it at least once, sometimes twice a day. And we promise you we will get back to you. And that number is 908-284-0500. Today we are very privileged to have with us two guests, one from California who's on the phone. You there, doctor?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great.
I'll start with the doctor first, okay? Dr. Albert and Skip Rizzo, I guess is how you'd like to be referred to, who's the director for medical virtual reality at the University of Southern California. I bet you don't have snow on your ground out there, do you?
I don't want to rub it in, but I'm sitting
outside. Yeah, you want to rub it in. Okay. You're sitting outside in your shorts on the back porch, right? Okay.
Well, we've had a little bit of rain lately out here.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, when it rains out here, we go, oh, rain, how quaint.
Yes, that's true. Dr. Rizzo conducts research on the design, development, and evaluation of virtual reality. Virtual reality systems targeting the areas of clinical assessment, rehabilitation, and resilience. This work spans the domains of psychological, cognitive, and motor functioning in both healthy and clinical populations. Dr. Rizzo's whose work using virtual reality-based exposure therapy to treat post-traumatic stress disorder received the American Psychological Association's 2010 award for outstanding contributions to the treatment of trauma. And he is the associate director for the medical virtual reality at the USC Institute for Creative Technologies. Dr. Rizzo, welcome. We appreciate you being here, taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to us.
Sure. Thank you very much for having me.
We also have with us Laura Aldi. Did I say that right?
You did.
All right. Wow. That was a good guess. And she is the co-organizer of Keswick Virtual Reality Meetup, whose volunteer mission is to bring awareness to virtual reality therapy for post-traumatic stress disorder and the positive applications of virtual reality for the community at large. Now, Laura and I, we met at a veterans fair, October, I guess it was.
Yes, that's right.
Right? And you had a table, and you were displaying post-traumatic stress disorder exposure therapy for veterans called Brave Mind.
Yes.
All right. Would you tell us what Brave Mind is and how you found out about it?
Yes, I found Brave Mind on the internet after 6 months of research looking for new and effective treatments for PTSD. And I'm personally fascinated by virtual reality. And I found Dr. Rizzo's work, and it's decades long. And I reached out to him, and he kindly shared his work with me. Brave Mind is a software that was created at the University of Southern California Institute for Creative Technologies, and it's provided free of charge for clinical research. And it had such an important and misunderstood mental illness that I felt that it was really important for people to be more aware. And I found out about Hunterdon Medical Center's first annual Veterans
Resource
Day.
Yeah,
and I said, can I show up? And they said yes, and that's how we
met. Gave you a table by the door.
Yeah.
In case they didn't like it, they'll get you out fast. But no, I was debating whether I was going to go or not because I was supposed to do something else that morning. And I figured, you know, it's the first one. Let me go. And I was surprised because I got conservatively 4 guests for the radio show that were there.
That's great.
You know, and one of them's already been on. The fellow we had on, Tom Brady, for Hunters Helping the Hungry, you know, donating deer that they shoot to homeless and, you know, food kitchens and stuff. But anyway, Dr. Rizzo, there is a stigma attached to just about all mental illnesses, I don't care which one, and also to post-traumatic stress disorder. Would you give us a definition of post-traumatic stress?
Sure. You know, everybody, when they're exposed to some type of traumatic event or emotionally challenging event, has, you know, difficult feelings and emotions to deal with. We all have it. It's a normal response when things don't go well for you. But with PTSD, it's where the reaction to the stress evolves beyond, you know, what you would normally see people experience. So, for example, you know, think about the worst thing that you've had to experience, maybe the death of a loved one, perhaps a you know, a car accident. Well, you feel
a tour in Vietnam was pretty nasty. Yeah.
That's Larry speaking personally, from personal experience. Yeah.
So when you immediately after a trauma, you feel horrible. With PTSD, that feeling doesn't go away. It continues to go on over time. You know, I'm getting a little bit of an echo here. Are you still there?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So with PTSD, it's an exaggerated response. It doesn't go away to stress. Most people, after a couple of weeks, a month, you know, they start to feel better, they move on, and they adapt. But with people with PTSD, the pain of the experience lingers to the point where they feel as bad 6 months later
as they felt the day after the event happened. So, you know, it comprises of a number of symptoms, you know, hypervigilance, you're easily startled, you have sleep disturbances, you feel emotionally numb, and you avoid going to places or thinking about things that remind you of the trauma. And that ends up perpetuating the disorder because you don't have the opportunity to confront, process, and move forward with your emotions. That is a sort of a normal response to stress over time. You eventually adapt to it. With PTSD, for whatever reason, and there's no shame, there's no, it's not like you're a weak person or lacking will or courage. It's just how the brain happens to react and process the stressor that leads to this long-term and sometimes chronic, lifelong suffering that people go through.
Yeah, it's, I met a school teacher who happened to have been on, came on a radio show, and she was in a minor car accident. And when the car impacted, her head went back and forth, and she had traumatic brain injury. Mm. And she can't remember the first 20 years of her life.
Wow.
And her mother is telling her, well, you remember when you were 7, you did it? No, Ma, I don't, you know. And her brothers try to help her, you know, recall some things, and she hasn't. She hasn't been able to recall it. But she suffers from post-traumatic stress also. And but she's, you know, she's a music teacher at school, at a local school here. And, you know, she won Teacher of the Year last year, and so she's going on with her life in spite of the illness and in spite of the trauma, you know.
Well, she's walking wounded, and there are many people right. like this that, you know, have had these horrible things, and combined with traumatic brain injury, you're kind of amplifying the effects. You know, and it's a difficult thing, and a lot of people don't realize that there is treatment for this. It's like you were saying initially about the stigma of mental health. A lot of times people don't want to admit that they're having a problem, and
exactly.
they don't. Last thing they want to do is go see a shrink and talk
mm-hmm.
about it.
Yeah.
And it's amplified in the military. Trust me, these guys are, you know, very macho, and when they come back, nobody wants to admit they're having difficulty, you know, and they avoid at all costs getting any kind of treatment, because that's like in the military, even though things are, they're trying to change things to make it more acceptable to ask for help, it's still viewed as a weakness.
Oh, yeah.
And it needs to move from weakness to wound, you know, that it's a mental wound that has as much impact and sometimes even more than some physical wounds.
Right. It's a chemical imbalance of the brain. And if your other organs can get sick, your brain is an organ and it can get sick, you know.
Absolutely.
And
I was going to say that one of the reasons why I felt so moved to be there in October was because I felt that there aren't enough options out there for veterans, and that it was really important for them to feel that there is hope, that people are working on this, that they can reach out if they need to.
Right. And, you know, it's I found it just mind-boggling that you hear about all the vets and, you know, PTSD and so on and so forth. And we were talking earlier before the show that 65% of the vets who have PTSD never saw combat.
Yep.
And they attribute it to the fact that in the service, in the military, regardless of what branch, you're regimentated. You get up at a certain hour, you do this at a certain hour, that at a certain hour, and yada, yada. The whole day is filled up with, you know, what you have to do. And then when you come home, it's like a whole new world. And a lot of times they can't adjust to it. You know, they have to now find a job, and they have to, you know, maybe support a family that they automatically took care of while they were in the service. And now they have to find a job to support the family. And, it, you know, all that stress. And it's very, you know, it's very sad. You know.
The stress of transitions like that affects people in ways. And this is part of the challenge with PTSD, as well as the mystery, is that everybody reacts to things differently. And, you know, something that might be simple for you to deal with or for someone else to deal with may actually affect the person in a more impactful way.
Right, so. Right. Doctor, what when you use virtual reality, what does that entail with whether it's a vet or somebody else or, you know, man, woman, sure. You know, child?
Yep. Well, you know, virtual reality is like a technology now that's emerging on a wider scale. It's been around for a long time, but essentially it's a methodology whereby you can immerse people in simulated environments. And whether it's a, you know, a first-person shooter game or a spaceship game, the user wears a headset and they look around and they feel as if they're in the world that's being created with the virtual graphics, you know, the 3D graphics. And what we do is we take what's already considered to be an evidence-based treatment, which is called prolonged exposure, a method typically done in imagination where the patient is asked to recount the trauma that they went through and describe it and narrate it as if they're going through it at the moment. And the clinician pushes them to confront and process these difficult emotional memories, and they do it repeatedly. And over time, as you do it and as you face it, the anxiety starts to get less and less. And so what we do with VR is we follow the exact same therapeutic procedures for this evidence-based approach, this trauma-focused therapy, prolonged exposure, but we deliver the scenarios in a customized fashion in virtual reality. So instead of relying on the patient trying to imagine the situation in their mind, they're being presented with it in a simulation as if they're going back to it. Now, I know probably a lot of your listeners are probably thinking, you're thinking to themselves, why the hell would you do this? This sounds like torture, making somebody go back to the scene of the crime, so to speak. But what we find is that if you do it in a gradual way and in a safe environment with a good supportive clinician, you end up helping a patient to confront these things that they've been trying to avoid, trying to push down into the deeper parts of their soul, if you will. And then when all of a sudden somebody brings up the war, or they see maybe trash by the side of the road that reminds them where an IED had been hidden that blew up their best friend, they react in an extreme way. It triggers these deep emotions. And what we're trying to do is get those emotions out and processed. Right. And discussed in a safe environment. And over time, eventually you see improvement. It doesn't happen in one session. You know, the traditional treatment goes, you know, anywhere from 9 to 12 sessions. But we do see objective improvements, not only in what people tell you in terms of their symptom ratings, but also we're seeing changes in brain activation. We're seeing changes in physiological responding. And in some studies, changes in biochemical blood markers like cortisol reactivity, things like that. So we're starting to gather evidence to show that, you know, helping a patient to go back and confront and process these difficult emotional memories can lead to recovery in some areas. Now, with that said, I believe that we need a more comprehensive approach. It's not just about this exposure therapy reducing fear and anxiety, but helping, just like you had said, helping people adjust to the transition from going from a very structured military life to, you know, the freewheeling world of everyday civilian life.
Exactly.
And one of the things that I was so impressed with when I looked at Brave Mind and I watched the videos, and there's so much information out there. Dr. Rizzo has a YouTube channel, and there's a couple of episodes where soldiers have gone through the program and they're talking about the impact that it's had, the positive impact that they feel like they can live again. And it was so incredible. And one of the other aspects of Brave Mind that's actually included in the software that Skip and I were talking about is a job simulator for veterans when they come home so that they actually can reacclimate into society. And that's just enormous because you know, Skip's work is not just on this one particular issue regarding it. I mean, it's broad based, and it's just, I think that's like, it's so important for people to hear about this and know that, you know, it exists.
Right. Laura, when you use Brave Mind, it's a virtual reality exposure therapy, correct? And what is that?
So I've never used it, but basically virtual reality to me as a layperson is where, you know, I'm going to Keswick VR, right? Okay. And this is where I've experienced virtual reality. And I go in and I put on what's called a head-mounted display or goggles, and I put on a headset like you're wearing, and I have a controller in each hand. And then what happens is I am plugged into a tower that has a high-powered graphics card in it, and the graphics card gets, you know, feeds data into my headset. So one of my first virtual reality experiences was being under the water, and a really cool blue whale swam by. And you really, truly feel like you are at the bottom of the ocean looking up, and you can interact with the environment. I could move a controller and touch a fish and that sort of thing. And I've not actually used BraveMind, but I've seen videos of it. It's encompassed in, you know, the head-mounted display and headset, and veterans can actually have simulated environments to the point where they could be holding holding a weapon, let's say. There are boxes that can produce scents that, you know, it's like burning tires or, you know, nasty right. smells that bring, you know, bring he or she back to that place. And Dr. Rizzo's work has also included, now they have a special kind of platform that can be made where a soldier could stand on it and actually feel, like, you know, sensations of motion or the ground rumbling, which brings them back to that particular memory again. I know from just my layperson experience about doing research about this that, you know, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Skip, but that, you know, with PTSD, what happens is that the mind and the emotions get disconnected, and that's why people have blocked out memories. And that as you can relive something and actually experience it with all five senses, then you can tap into it and process it.
Correct.
So, Dr. Rizzo, this is Tracy. Maybe you could expand a little bit more on how and where BraveMind is being used right now.
Yes. The initial version of the system produced in 2007 went out to about 70 sites, various VA centers, Army medical centers like Walter Reed, and university clinics. And from that work, in about 2 to 3 years, we learned a lot about how people react to the system and also what their needs were. Back at that time, we only had enough funding to build 4 different worlds, which were an Afghan roadway, an Iraqi roadway, and a generic Middle Eastern city. And from that, we learned patients had more diverse kinds of trauma experiences, like Afghan villages in remote areas or mountain outposts in a forward operating base. So around 2011, we were funded to update the system, and we went from 4 worlds to 14, and we diversified the content within those worlds. So now we've got a very comprehensive system that has both Iraq and Afghan content and everything from crowded cities to you know, very rural areas and roadways and so forth. That system now is out at about 45 sites. And we just actually got a donation from Dell Computers, AMD Graphic Cards, and HTC Valve Head Mount Display Manufacturer, where they've donated 10 systems that we're going to be distributing out for free to various VAs in need that also have people there that are trained in delivering exposure therapy. And so we're starting to get corporate interest in sponsoring this. Initially, it was kind of thought to be science fiction. You know, when we first came up with doing this, a lot of people were skeptical. It's like whenever you bring technology into clinical applications, clinicians get a little leery that, oh, are you trying to replace my role? Are you trying to, you know, do something that is flashy but not scientifically based? But over the years, I think we've made a convincing case with the scientific research that's been done that makes it so that, you know, this is credible. And the outcomes we're delivering really affect people in positive ways. And we still have a long way to go. I mean, we're doing a study right now at Emory University with a set of simulations we built for military sexual trauma. And this is another source of PTSD in the military that's often not talked about, but is very controversial and very difficult to deal with. And if we get success with that, then we're aiming to open it up for more civilian applications, because much of what we built to address military sexual trauma was, in fact, civilian scenarios. We have a small town with a bar and an alleyway and a motel and cars that you ride in, or offices, barracks, bedrooms, things like that. So if we get success in that area, then we move towards taking everything we've learned, addressing military populations, and delivering it on a broader scale for civilian trauma, of which sexual trauma is a major area. We're also working with a group in France to build out some of the Paris terrorist attack sites. And even though it's a very small population relative to the giant veteran population, we still feel it's important that people that are still suffering a year, year and a half after these attacks could have access to this kind of treatment and maybe overcome some of these challenges. So we're seeing, as the technology for virtual reality gets better, faster, cheaper, and more widely disseminated, that this may become another method that, with good science documenting its validity, may be able to add value to what clinicians can offer to extend their skills, not replace good clinical care,
right,
but rather be used as a tool to extend the skills of a well-trained, thoughtful, and empathetic clinician.
Let me ask you a question, Doctor. Let me relate a short story that happened a couple of years back. A fella called me who I was stationed with overseas, and we went through all sorts of training together, beef briar and all that. And he was going to be, he's from the Midwest in Idaho, I believe. And he was coming to New York, and he wanted to know if I could meet with him and we could have supper and whatever. So I said, sure. So we're walking down Fifth Avenue, and I'm crossing the street, and all of a sudden I'm looking around. There was a, I don't know whether it was a bus or a truck that backfired.
Uh-huh.
And I looked around, and he wasn't there. And I looked down at the ground. He's down, curled up in a ball with hands over his head. And I really didn't know what to do. You know, I was, like,
right,
shocked. And so I got him up and everything. And he says, yeah, you know, he says, that happens sometimes, you know. And so now, it had been good many years, I don't want to say how many, but a good many years since we got discharged and this took place. So evidently, his whole life, he's been living with it. Can someone like that get help?
Yes.
I forced him pretty much to reach out to Lyons Hospital here in Jersey and go up there, although he was, you know, only going to be here for a couple of weeks. But he did go, and they recommended after his couple of weeks that he was there to a hospital back in Idaho, a vet hospital back there. So, I, you know, we still email, but that subject never comes up. I just ask him how he is and how's everything,
sure,
you know, because I don't feel like I'd be prying, you know. But,
right.
I just,
well, you know, what you saw there was the re-experiencing episode. And,
right.
It's really a trigger, a backfire that sounds like a gun.
Right.
And the brain reacts in that fight-or-flight response where it, you know, you act the way that you would have acted in combat to that sound.
Right.
And, you know, this hypervigilance, this hyperarousal that PTSD, one of the hallmark symptoms of, you know, these are things that probably serve you well in combat. You know, being hypervigilant probably mm-hmm. kept you alive, you know, noticing things, looking around. But then once you come back to civilian life, that level of hypervigilance is just not functional. But the brain is sort of stuck in that mode.
Right.
And
right.
This is where, you know, we try to help the person to confront these things where, yes, that backfire may go off, but the nervous system doesn't react in such an extreme way. It may bring back a memory. It's like, oh, God, that sounded like, you know, an AK-47
right.
shot. But that's a different experience, just to have that remembrance of it than to have that extreme bodily reaction to it. And this is what we try to do. We try to detune the nervous system back down to a level where the things that were threats in combat are no longer perceived as threats in the civilian sector. We hear about people driving in L.A. down the 405 freeway, and when they come back, and all of a sudden they see trash by the side of the road, and they freak because it reminds them, it's a trigger for the, you know, where an IED was hidden, embedded in some trash by the side of the road that blew up their vehicle.
Right.
You know, this is what we're trying to help folks, you know, sort of retune for civilian life, to realize those triggers are no longer threats.
Right, right. How is Brave Mind currently being used?
It's you know, pretty much as I described, there was a number of VA centers, medical centers in the Army and in the Air Force, actually, and university clinics that offer this treatment. And for any of your listeners, if they want to contact me, I can send a list of places where this is available. And they could seek treatment. If, unfortunately, it's not at every VA, it's not at every vet center, but I think over time it will continue to grow. The challenge is, again, clinicians sometimes tend to be skeptical of new technology, and you know, it's a slow, gradual haul to get the acceptance to use this. And now that we're collecting data and showing, you know, the science behind it, I think it'll get a little bit easier. And as I said, the cost of the equipment and the availability and the public awareness, that's a real big issue. Like Laura going to setting up the meetups, that's part of the public awareness campaign for VR. I mean, eventually, I think our vision is that every home will probably have a VR system, a VR headset, whether it's for gaming or watching news stories in spherical video or doing educational activities or mental health opportunities. But when VR systems are like toasters, where, you know, every house has one, you might not use it every day, but every house has one, then, you know, we've got this large market penetration. VR will no longer be some science fiction, Star Trek kind of a technology. It'll become another form of media consumption, and at that point, I think we're going to see a much wider uptake in healthcare and clinical applications, well beyond PTSD. I mean, as Laura mentioned, we're doing job interview training systems with people with high functioning autism and now veterans to help them learn how to navigate a job interview. We've developed systems for testing and training cognitive function with people with attention deficit disorder or traumatic brain injury or stroke. So I think we'll see it gradually become more widespread once people know about it more. You know, I go to conferences and do talks on this, and particularly at psychology or rehab conferences. I'll start off before my talk and say, how many people have tried a head-mounted virtual reality headset? And I have one in my hand at the time, and only about 10% raised their hand. So what I do is I hand out this headset, which runs on a mobile phone, actually, and let the audience pass it around and try it so that they understand what the technology affords. Until you've actually put your head in one of these things and moved around and all of a sudden feeling like you're in a place other than where you are physically in reality, I think it's hard to understand the impact that these kinds of simulations can provide. So I think that's what's going to happen in the next two to four years, I think.
Dr. Rizzo, I have had a headset on and tried it. It's amazing. Question, how long would a vet in one of the sessions normally be working with this headset? Is it a 10-minute, 20, 30? And is it something they can do at home, or do they need to be supervised?
That's a very good question, because I think some people have concerns that if you spend too much time in a VR environment, you might be more susceptible to motion sickness or whatever. And what we do is pretty much have an hour and a half session, of which 30 to 40 minutes is done in VR. The rest of the time, the beginning is catching up with the client about what they've gone through in a week and so on, all the normal parts of therapy and building a trusting relationship. Then go into the VR, do the exposure, and then the rest of the session is spent in doing the processing, talking about what they experienced, what their challenges are, what other things are going on in their life as well that might be relevant to address in a clinical setting. And so that that's the in-session time. Now, we haven't done the at-home independent stuff, and that may come at a later point, but we're taking, you know, very cautious steps. We feel that this is very provocative therapy, and it's best delivered with, you know, the clinician right there. Probably the next step will be for a teletherapy application where there's a clinician, you know, through a video feed connected to another person, to a, you know, a patient, and they can do the exposure in that way. That's been done with the traditional form of exposure therapy and imagination with good results. So that would be the next step. We want to take safe steps here. And once we can start to see that patients maybe have the potential to practice on their own, then we would move in that direction as these systems get much cheaper so that a patient could afford, or could, we could loan systems for patients to use at home.
Okay. So you also have some software that relates to pre-deployment?
Oh, yeah.
Strive?
Yes. This was a project that evolved as we were building the second generation system, where we had built so much content that we started to look at it like, geez, we've got like the digital backlot at Universal Studios for war pictures, if you want. And we also were driven, motivated by the idea that maybe we could reduce the negative outcomes that some people experience of going into combat by doing a better job before they go to combat to prepare them for what they might face and give them training in various stress management, coping skill training, resilience training, which is becoming quite popular in the military, and essentially put ourselves out of a job on the back end treating PTSD by doing a better job on the front end before people ever go to these provocative events like war, and give them better mental skills for coping. I mean, think about a 19-year-old that is, you know, signs up for the military, best intentions, and the most difficult thing they've dealt with in the past might be, you know, Mary Sue breaking up with them before the senior ball or something, you know, the senior prom. And now you're asking them after, you know, 6 months of intensive training, now to go to combat where they could be standing next to their best friend and see their head get blown off, or to see a dead child laying by the side of the road, or, you know, have to kill somebody. You know, these are unnatural events for humans in modern society. So you've got to prepare them for what they're going to face and give them the skills that they might not have ordinarily developed prior for coping. So what we do is we put people in these simulations, like I said, the back lot at Universal Studios, and we put them in immersive interactive narratives where they're with a squad in VR and on missions. And so, like, instead of watching, say, Band of Brothers on television, sitting on your butt on a couch watching it, you're in the Band of Brothers episode.
Mm-hmm.
You're wearing that headset. You're on a foot patrol with a squad going through an Afghan village. And at the end of these missions, or episodes, as we call them, they go for 4 to 7 minutes. Something bad happens. And the bad thing that happens, we've modeled after the kinds of things that people with PTSD tell us are the things that haunt them, like, you know, seeing the death of a child, or having one of your comrades get hit, or, you know, a whole wide variety of things that people, you know, report that haunt them. And so we put them through this before they ever go, where they're on a mission, and then it ends with something bad happening. But in that moment when the bad thing happens, we actually have an intelligent virtual human that walks into the scene. Very similar to, like, I don't know if you've ever seen the TV show Dexter, where
Mm-hmm. His dad would pop up periodically.
Right.
His dad's
right.
been dead for a number of years, and he talks with him. Well, the mentor character walks in and looks at the scene, and the user now, it's all fresh. They've experienced, you know, something that's quite emotionally evocative, actually. And the mentor now says, okay, this is tough stuff. Well, let's talk about how to deal with it. And each one of these episodes has a different lesson, whether it's very basic stress management, like deep breathing exercises, something which a 19-year-old is going to laugh at if you tell them, oh, you got to regulate your breathing and that'll help manage your stress. Well, now you walk them through it in the context of what just happened. All of a sudden they start to feel, you know, maybe their heart rate goes down. Maybe they feel more relaxed. Maybe they see that there's something to it. And hopefully that skill or that tactic would be applied if, God forbid, they have to face similar types of challenges in combat. And, of course, we go well beyond deep breathing. We go into a lot of higher-end cognitive behavioral processes like attacking faulty reasoning, cognitive distortions, looking at ways people reappraise the events in their world in a fashion that's more adaptive for coping. You know, if somebody has something bad happen to them, and the first thing that pops into their mind is, oh, I'm never going to get it right. I'm a horrible person. This always happens to me. Well, the consequent emotions that follow that are very negative. And a lot of people have this kind of habitual way of dealing with adversity that doesn't do them any good. But the good news is it can be taught. You can right. teach people to understand their stress response and understand what leads up to it. That, yes, the event is very challenging, but a lot of the reaction you have is what you tell yourself about the event, what your inner dialogue is. And we can modify that. We can help people have a more adaptive way of dealing with stress in terms of how they think about it. And so that's what we do in what we call the Stress Resilience in Virtual Environments Project. As well, we're also doing things like measuring people's heart rate and skin conductance and blood biomarkers while people go through these episodes. So maybe we can understand people that are more resilient or less resilient and may need more training before we send them into combat. You know, the common doctrine in the military has always been every man's a rifleman. You know, that everybody is going to be trained and is going to do the job in combat. But maybe some people aren't cut out for that, you know, for whatever reason. No shame. You know, some people are, you know, probably going to be brilliant doing some kind of tactical position or a desk job of some type or, you know, a cook or, you know, a maintenance person for aircraft. I mean, fair enough. The military has many jobs other than being a ground pounder, you know. So we've got to be able to select people based on not just their physical fitness, but their psychological fitness. And this is a quantum shift for the military that only in the last 10 years have they really, really accepted that view and begun to promote it.
I was going to say, Skip, that I told you that you're my virtual reality hero because what people hear you talking about is years and years worth of research and information. And I told you I think 2017 is going to be the year where this project and the work that you've been doing gets noticed, and I will do everything that I possibly can to be sure that that happens. And I felt that one of the gaps between, you know, the software actually getting into hospitals and being used properly in VAs was, one, awareness, but two, was potentially funding. And I just want to say I'm absolutely willing to do Kickstarter programs for any clinical research facilities that are interested in the local area. I know that there have been a few that had shown some interest. And I also, if anyone at Hunterdon Medical Center would like to speak with you about this, I would be more than happy to help, you know, organize something locally here since I'm in New Jersey. I'm happy to. And I think that what would happen next with what my vision was would be for be, you know, to help you get this everywhere that it needs to be. It's some sort of, you know, ground campaign. And if that's possible, if anybody's interested, I would say contact Dr. Rizzo, contact me, contact the chamber. Let's saying this
right get now. Some oh, yeah. specific numbers and
sure.
emails right now.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Skip, did you want to give your information?
Yeah, sure. Hey, Laura, I want to thank you for that because, you know, we've got to look at this problem for helping our wounded warriors, our veterans. We've got to look at it as a team effort. We have a moral responsibility as a society to do everything we can for the people that defend our nation. It's not about politics. It's just about it's not whether a war is good or bad. It's about taking care of the people that step up. And it's everybody's responsibility. You know, World War II, there was a heck of a lot more shared sacrifice, whether it was rationing or, you know, the worry about whether we would eventually be invaded. Well, we don't have that same level of shared sacrifice now. And so now is the time for people to step up. And I applaud your kind, thoughtful efforts in this, Laura. It really matters and makes a difference. And I hope more people think like how you do about this being a responsibility that we can't ignore. We can't have another Vietnam where Vietnam vets coming back that served their country were not serviced the way they deserved. They weren't responsible for that war. They were the ones that got stuck having to deal with it. So we need to do this. I want to add that if there's people in the local tri-city or the tri-state area that are interested, there is a VR system at Cornell Weill Medical Center. My colleague Joanne DeFede has the system and is treating people and running a number of clinical trials. So you could easily get into it if you live in the New York City area. She also has a system for treating World Trade Center PTSD using simulations of the World Trade Center, and that has also shown really good results. Now, if folks want to contact me, I can give a very simple email. It's arizzo, A-R-I-Z-Z-O, at usc.edu. And if you punch my name into Google, it'll pop up and you'll be able to find my contact information. And I'd be glad to talk with folks and help anybody to try to, whether it's using VR or other resources that we have available or that I know of, try to help folks move forward.
And I agree with everything that you've said. Thank you so much. And also, thank you so much to Hunterdon Chamber and NAMI for having us on the show. My email is not as simple. It's laura.anne.aldi@gmail.com.
Okay. Why don't you just repeat that real quickly?
It's laura.anne.aldi@gmail.com.
Right. And what about a website for people who are interested in finding out more about it? Is there one?
For Brave Mind?
There is a website for our research center. If you punch in the Institute for Creative Technologies on Google, that will... Bing, whatever you use for search engine, it'll pop up our website.
Okay,
and so you'll see the diversity of projects that not only our lab have, but the other labs that our research institute have.
So that's the Institute for Creative Technologies. You'd punch that into your search engine, or Brave Mind. You punch that in. Laura, any other email, websites, whatever?
At www.meetup.com. /Keswick, KESWICKVR.
Okay.
If you have a website for this show or a podcast, you're more than welcome to post the YouTube channel's main link that will allow people to explore about 100 videos up there now of different clinical virtual reality applications. So I can send that link to you if it's relevant, or Laura, you may have it already.
I do have that. I can pass that on.
Do you have that handy?
Handy.
Or they could just go to YouTube and look up. What would they look up on YouTube? Would they look up Brave Mind?
Skip Rizzo.
Just look up Skip Rizzo on YouTube.
Yep.
So that's SKIPRIZZO on YouTube, and a lot of your clinical research and so forth would come up. That's great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think we're at the end of the hour here. We really want to thank you. It's very important, the work that you're doing.
Yes, I do appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule and talking to us for an hour.
Yes, or, thank you.
And
both of you.
You know, you. We hope that you know, it does get broader as time goes on. I gave Laura a way to download this so she can send it to you, however.
I will send
put
it
her
tomorrow.
On the website, whatever.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You so thank you.
Thank you.
And we won't be on next week. The chamber is closed. They'll be doing rewinds. So we'll see you in 2 weeks. And remember, folks, mental health really does matter.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big Z coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic, and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
I'm your ice cream man, stop me when I'm passing by.
It's time to visit Pambi's, the newest ice cream shop in town. Pambi's Purely Delicious Ice Cream, Gelato, and Sorbet, made in Hunterdon County from unique blends of natural extracts, herbs, and spices. Created with a rich, creamy texture bursting with flavor. Tickle your palate with exotic flavors such as rose cardamom, hot mango, and ginger lemon. Or satisfy your craving for dark chocolate, pecans, and caramel. Located on Route 31, south of Clinton. Pambi's Purely Delicious.
See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
This is Tony Clark, para planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey.